the socialists are mad at me now. I really put my foot in it. All the socialists are mad at me now. All the people that think the government is the answer, and the government owes you education, the government owes you health care, the government owes you a house, owes you no debt. Ah, now all these people are mad at me that want to be dependents. The people who are trained, and our kids in college today are trained to think that government is the answer, and the government needs to provide for them. And no, it doesn't actually, ladies and gentlemen. That leads to Venezuela. You are to be a self-starter. You are to do things for yourself. Forget about what everybody else is doing. Don't succumb to the temptation of class envy, where shame on that guy for being successful. I want some of his success. Go get your own success. Let other people be happy. Let other people do what they do. I'll give you a perfect example of it. My kid was playing basketball, and they had a basketball camp, and they had a competition, and the coach had a stupid rule that no one kid was allowed to win more than one trophy. And they had he had these trophies on a table, and the kids were competing for the trophies. And of course, everybody wants to win. And they had different competitions, a dribbling competition, the shooting competition, the one-on-one competition, three or four or five, six different competitions, six trophies. But he said it was not fair if one person won every trophy. So he said, you can only win one trophy. So my son Paul was a great player. So he won the ball control competition or whatever, the dribbling, and then he also won the free throw competition. But he couldn't get the trophy because even though he won it, it wasn't fair. So the second place guy ended up getting a trophy for winning the free throw competition, even though he didn't win. This is a perfect example of socialism. Take from the rich, give to the poor. It's not fair that someone should achieve and have more than you. So my son, it was a double wrong. My son got robbed because he won, and he didn't get anything. And the kid that didn't win got a trophy. This is a perfect example. And I was so upset at it. Now look, what does that do for your motivation? The kids worked hard to win. When they find out that you really don't win, you can't win because your winnings are going to be redistributed to other people. It takes away your motivation to be the best. Well, I can be the second best and still get a flipping trophy. So I was so upset about this. I went to the coach and I said, what are you, a communist, a socialist? What is this? Well, I don't like the idea of having first place trophies. Then don't put the trophies on the table. If you're going to, then don't do it. If you either believe in it or don't. You believe in rewarding effort, then reward effort. And if one kid wins every trophy, he deserves to win every trophy. Give him every trinket in the house. Let the kid win. Everybody will see that, and they'll want to strive to beat that kid next year. That produces competition. It's good for everybody. The kid who loses needs to lose, needs to fail, so that the greatest stories of success have come on the heels of failure. Unbelievable what this stupid coach did. And he eventually said, maybe you're right. I mean, I called him on the phone. I was so upset about it. And I thought later that I really should have gone on the basketball floor and announced to all the parents in the stands, did you people just see what happened here? This is a perfect example of socialist government. To not reward hard work, to give people successes that they didn't deserve. He was the government, the coach, and he decided. He decided who was going to win, and it didn't depend on the person that won. It depended on his beneficence, his benevolence, and he was the dictator. And it was a false system set up that purported to reward effort, but that in the end didn't. You shouldn't get a trophy for getting up in the morning. You know, you really shouldn't. That's why our kids today, some kids, they're not prepared for the real world because they've been spoiled all their lives, told how great they are. You're so wonderful, Johnny. You're so wonderful, Susie. You're the best. You're the best. You're the best. And then you see these morons trying out for the singing competitions, American Idol, and they're terrible. Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light? And Simon Cowell says, you stink. Get off the stage. Gus, the fair Simon Cowell was mean to me. Well, you know, go back to the drawing board or do something that you're good at, because we're not just going to tell you you're great when you're not. So sorry, kid that won the trophy for the three free throw competition, you weren't the best. So he has to look at that trophy every day of his life and think, I didn't really win that. Paul won it. Paul won that. And Paul, who won it, didn't get anything. Yeah. So Paul is going to move to China, where they still reward people. My whole point there is that this is a scriptural principle. If a man doesn't work, neither shall he eat. If a man doesn't win the free throw competition, neither shall he get the trophy for the free throw competition. That's what that verse basically states. And we're not going to, Paul doesn't say that we're going to take from somebody who has food and give it to somebody who doesn't have food. And for the students today who love the idea of socialism, they love the concept of everything being equal, I tell them, okay, we're going to take the A that you got. It's not fair. I mean, you worked hard, you got an A. This poor guy over here, he got a D. And so it's not fair, really. You had more advantages in life. This kid had a bad childhood or whatever. So we're going to bring things to equal. We're going to take your A, reduce it to a C, and we're going to bring his D up. We're going to give his grade to you, basically, so it's evened out. That way it'll be fair. All of a sudden, when it touches them personally, ooh, maybe that's not such a great idea. Yeah, maybe it's not. All right, I'm going to go back to that Psychology Today article. PsychologyToday.com about why Facebook might be driving you crazy, but why you can't get away from it at the same time. You love to hate it, right? That old saying. The last time I talked to you about this, I said that it can lead to a sense of false consensus. And that's what the educational system is today anyway. They're constantly affirming people for doing poorly. Well, he tried. He tried. Well, trying doesn't really count. It's results that count. Sorry. We got that. Number four, it can keep you in touch with people you'd really rather forget. Well, this is your own fault if you do this. You know, like I say, if you're upset by watching the news, then you quit watching the news. I got to look at the details here. Want to know what your ex is up to? You can, and that might not be a good thing. Facebook stalking has made it harder to let go of past relationships. Then get off of Facebook. Deprogram yourself. That upsets me. I'm not even going to finish reading it. Number five. Remember, these are the seven ways Facebook can make you nuts. It can make you jealous of your current partner. Okay, that's all the stalking stuff. Get me out of here. Number six, it can reveal information you might not want to share with potential employers. This is huge, too, because basically everything can provide information. Your search habits on the internet are known by certain people who pitch advertising to you. And, of course, if you're on Facebook, things can get out of control, things get out of hand, and certainly a future employer can find things about you that you don't want them to know. In a way, it's a very real example of the Big Brother syndrome. Except here, you're voluntarily doing it. You know, Big Brother can find you whether you're doing these things or not. You can be shopping on the internet and Big Brother can find you. So don't make it easier than it needs to be for Big Brother to find you. Number seven, here's the killer. It can become addictive, Facebook. Ken, think society's most common addictive substances are coffee, cigarettes, and alcohol? Think again. The DSM-V, that is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, indicates a new diagnosis that has stirred controversy, a series of items gauging internet addiction. Since then, Facebook addiction has gathered attention from both popular media and empirical journals, leading to the creation of a Facebook addiction scale. Yes, I didn't know this existed either. There is a Facebook addiction scale named by an individual named, or discovered by, or researched by an individual, calls himself Paddock. I assume that's his last name. To explore the seriousness of this, I assume that's his last name. I got to say this while I'm thinking about it. I didn't mean to tell you yesterday that the person of lawlessness was going to be a woman. I just said that now, because of the text, it's possible. It's now the human of lawlessness. If it was Paul's intention to tell us that this individual would be a male, it would have said man. And the Greek word for man is different than the Greek word for human. I don't know those words now. I don't want to do a live study. It takes up too much time. I don't have my glasses. The light is insufficient. And I forget whether Thessalonians comes before or after Timothy. All right. The field's open, is what I'm saying. I still think it'll be a man. But I don't know that for sure, do I? No. Number 7, Facebook can become addictive. Yes, now they have a scale, an addiction scale. To explore the seriousness of this addiction, Hoffman and colleagues, from a study in 2012, randomly texted participants over the course of a week to ask what they most desired at that particular moment. Ooh, I hope nobody wants me to text them answer to that question. They found that among their participants, social media use was craved even more than tobacco and alcohol. But what about sex? What about sex? That doesn't say just tobacco and alcohol. I'm thinking now, my own study, the Zender study of 2016, that social media is craved even more than sex, because at least social media can keep your fantasies alive. Because, of course, when you're interacting with someone or multiple people on Facebook, you never have to deliver, do you? No. And it's clean. It's not messy. And so you can keep yourself behind that curtain like the Great Wizard of Oz. And you never want to meet the person, because then they'll find out that you're really a jerk. So Facebook keeps the fantasy alive, so I would think that Facebook, in a way, would be even more satisfying than actual sex with an actual person. The article ends this way. Of course, the news isn't all that bad. Some research finds Facebook may decrease loneliness when used to keep up to date and to keep in touch with others. I grant that, but that's part of the addiction of it. You don't have to be alone today. There's a difference between being alone and loneliness. People, and this is part of the intoxicant of Babylon. People do not have time to think. They do not want time to think. People purposely make themselves distracted. They make themselves distracted so that they don't have to confront uncomfortable realities in their lives or in the world. You keep those nasty thoughts at bay. And you know what this can result in. People who do that, sometimes the payment comes due all at once, and people have nervous breakdowns because they haven't taken care of these things along the way. They haven't engaged the problem as it comes up, or they haven't, for instance, gotten in touch with their grief or with their emotions, with their feelings, with their anger, and so they box it up, they pen it up, they bottle it within, it never comes out. And so this is what amusements allow you to do. This is what Facebook allows you to do. As soon as you have a troubling thought, I got to get to Facebook. Hey, I do the same thing, but not to a terrible degree. Not with Facebook, but with YouTube. If I'm writing and I'm having a tough paragraph, I just can't get through it and I get frustrated. Alt-tab over to Facebook, watch Groucho Marx episode of You Bet Your Life from 1957. You know, that's my entertainment. It's very tempting. It's very addictive. Fenn Dieters and Matthias Mehl, M-E-H-L, Mehl, in 2012, randomly assigned participants to post more status updates than they typically did per week, and found that this led to increased feelings of social connectedness. There it is, the world connectedness, and lower levels of loneliness. Yes, of course. In the end, Facebook is probably a lot like other technological advances, such as the automobile. Whether or not it hurts you or cousin Annabelle depends on where y'all drive and how frequently y'all get behind the wheel. That's a cute little analogy at the end there about driving and keeping in touch with Aunt Annabelle, Cousin Annabelle, excuse me. So I say it's playing with fire, and I say it's no accident that it's here, at least by God's standards. It's no accident. God wanted this to happen. You saw the curves I showed you 2 weeks ago. Now, if you haven't, go back. Talk about the crash course that humanity is on. This is all part of it. The hyperconnectivity that keeps people from thinking, keeps people from being analytical, keeps people from going into this boring book called the Scriptures. Some people can't even watch a 14-minute show here. Oh, going on 15. From yours truly, because they don't have the attention span. It's too hard. It's like I wrote books before. That's all I did was write books. I've got to reach other people. Other people have different ways to learn. So, yeah, Martin, it's too hard to read your books. Okay, some people. So I did talks, audios. I put audios on. They're so long. Other people, I admit, you folks who think and who love me, Martin, your videos need to be longer. Your audios need to be longer. We love it. We can't get enough of you. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I do. Other people, they can only watch a video. And a short video at that, if it's more than 2 minutes, they're done. They can't do it. And so I don't necessarily blame these people. It's a result of culture. It's a result of environment. These people aren't bad people, but the environment is so, this Facebook and other social media, so seductive, so tempting that it's hard to stay away, isn't it? But now that we're aware of the problem, now that we know that it's part of the intoxicant of Babylon, maybe we'll be more discerning about it, spend more quiet time, spend time reading books. My books are very good. Go to martincenter.com and hit books. And we will be more intelligent and we will be able to discern the times. I wish that for us. I would not condemn people who can't, because the whole world is going to be going this way. But let us be the exceptions.